My Chops TV.
You will be chopped.
You know what that means? Licking my chops.
Today I will show you how to do a karate chop.
Simply saying, no, he doesn't have the chops to do what it takes.
New thing. I'm busting chops.
Welcome to Chops TV, featuring Jennifer Lopez. Now here's Chops.
And welcome back to Chops TV. As always, I'm your host, Chops, joined by my wife, J-Lo. We got lots to talk about this week, so I hope everybody has everything that was stuck in their teeth out, and so we can just focus.
That seems like a personal attack.
I just mean it in general. I hope nobody has anything stuck in their teeth that's impeding their ability to talk, listen, focus, enjoy.
I just can't believe you can do anything when things are caught in your teeth. I become an immobile person.
You just shut down. Is out of the teeth, you just shut down.
I can't focus on anything else besides whatever is in my teeth.
And the worst part about it is, too, when you are really going after it, and I don't shut down completely, but when you're really going after it and you're just trying to use your tongue, and then like a day later you get a canker sore because you overused your tongue, that's my theory, is that canker sores develop more the more you pick at your teeth with your tongue.
You've never looked like someone who has overused their tongue.
Wow.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. It just is like I'm trying my best like not to curse this one. So like I don't know how else to compensate.
So instead you're just telling inappropriate jokes.
Yeah.
That's how we're going to go. Well, somebody who does have to use their tongue a lot is a singer, like a pop star. How's that for a transition? Did I get better, Adam?
No. At least you're trying, though. A for effort.
So this week, something we had, it was on our radar just like because I just saw, Donald Glover came out with something new. I've liked a lot of the things he's done. I've never actually sat down and like watched all of Atlanta, but I know people really like it. I like Childish Gambino and his rap career. I liked him on Community, so he's been around a long time. So it's always interesting to see what route he's going to go because he's sort of a renaissance man that makes anything. But I saw that he had a new show.
What's your favorite Childish Gambino song?
3005.
Yeah.
That's kind of a basic one.
It is a basic one.
I'm not like super versed in it, but I like his music.
Yeah, I get it.
What's your favorite?
I like the Bonfire one.
Oh yeah, is that a deep cut? Look at you.
It's not that deep. It's not that deep.
So Donald Glover has a new show that he co-created with Janine Neighbors, and it's called Swarm. And honestly, beyond Donald Glover being one of the creators of it and that being like, sure, I'll give this a shot, I had no idea what I was getting into.
Yeah, I had zero clue.
You knew that it was going to be, you know, like black culturally. That's like the only thing that like going in, I was like, this is what like Donald Glover offers a lot in what he's creating.
Yeah.
And so we go in and you're just the first episode, you're just kind of taking it in and it really escalates as it goes on. And then it doesn't really stop escalating from there.
Yeah. Once you've hit like the peak of the like middle, I would say, of episode two, it's pretty much like hyperdrive for the rest of the series.
And I mean, there are still bits and pieces of it that are funny. He's obviously somebody who has a history in comedy as well. And it's interesting to see how like the real life stuff melds with this sort of fake universe they had. And we're going to get into how they do that. But
yeah, if you want no spoilers whatsoever, going in like we did completely fresh,
stop listening
now
and come back.
Yeah.
All right. So spoiler time for Swarm. Essentially, it's now I was looking into it more because every episode starts with something that's like these people are like the names are changed and everything. But if they have any similarities to real life people, that is intentional.
Yes, it's like a disclaimer that they broadcast.
Yeah, because it's funny because normally that disclaimer has to be just like written in the end credits of most movies and TV shows. It's just like a legal thing that they have to do. But instead they flip it and say, no, it is intentional and it is supposed to represent real people. So if you go, I think this might be, that's probably what they're building off of. And that was interesting, which is like a real weird play on the based on a true story, which most of us know at this point is kind of BS. Doesn't really mean anything. You just take a small kernel, like Cocaine Bear, based on a true story. Like, not really, but okay. There's cocaine in the woods once. That's basically it. This one, while you're as you're watching it, you because of that disclaimer, you kind of sit there and go, did this happen?
The whole time. Did this happen? Yeah, the whole time I was confused as to what is real and what is not real, especially when you get to the episode 6 mm-hmm. and it's almost like a true crime kind of a documentary style thing. And you're like, okay, so at the beginning of that, I was like, so it is fake. But then at the end, they start showing different people in the context of the things that are happening in the show. So you're like, oh, wait, is it actually real? And then even there's even a clip from Donald Glover saying that they're making a show based off the events of what's happening. So I'm like, what is real?
That one, yeah, that part got real meta because, one, you mentioned the interview from Donald Glover there at the end of that episode. And then also it's like, I can tell that like the lady playing the detective is playing a part and it's acting and yeah. these are setups. But like, she's just interviewing all these people and like, are these people playing the people that were in the show but different? Backtrack.
Let's backtrack.
Yes.
It's Beyonce, the queen bee herself, and the show's called Swarm, which now with context, that makes absolute sense because they call it the beehive. Mm-hmm. She's the queen bee. And whenever she has these kind of crazy, crazed fan, obsessive, compulsive thoughts, you hear this like swarm of bees
right
in her head, basically.
And so it's the extension of something that a lot of us see on Twitter and can, you know, maybe not experience firsthand, but you can see it happening sometimes in real time, that like these super fans of pop stars are just about the like easiest to mobilize and effective army we have right now in the world.
It's like, it's incredible how
in and the I don't same, mean that like in a hyperbolic way of like armies. No, yeah. Like they really get stuff done.
Yeah, they get it done. But like it's crazy how a fandom like that around like a singular person or a group or something is either the most welcoming, accepting, and inviting place and community on the internet, or it's an absolute cesspool of toxic waste in people.
And so what happens if one of the people who is getting involved in the swarm, the beehive, whatever you're going to call it here, what happens when somebody who's getting really into that is somebody that is struggling with trauma and dealing with that, and maybe because of trauma earlier in life is a bit unhinged, and what happens when that person snaps? So in this show, in the first episode, you see this relationship that seems like best friend, sister. It's not 100% clear right away yeah. what exactly their relationship is, but you appear to have one that's pretty well adjusted and acclimated into normal life, and she looks out for this other friend who, I mean, at the beginning, you're just like, eh, she's weird.
She's definitely like socially awkward.
A little antisocial too.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what's going on here? And then in it, you basically get, it's called Festival. It's the release of the music video, well, music album that basically it coincides with Lemonade, which yeah. came out in 2016.
Everything that happens in relation to like big moments of like Beyonce's career correlates to like a real life timeline. So like 2016, Lemonade drops, they are sending like and showing tweets and like Twitter footage of like the elevator incident. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then like they had, when they go to Bonnaroo, like that's supposed to be Beychella and all that stuff. So that, and that makes it even more confusing too, because so much of it is real. Essentially she's Nyjah, but like even in the documentary style footage in episode 6, it's actual Beyonce merchandise that they just blur right. over.
To the point where, yeah, one of the people they're interviewing who's a member of the Beehive has a pillow. He's got a bunch of decorative pillows. And one of them clearly says E-H, I've. And it's like, well, you're just kind of covering up the... So, like, they, you know, they tried their, like, best to, like, not technically show any Beyonce stuff, like, directly. But it's not hard to figure out. And no. that's why, yeah, you're right. It kind of plays with your head there at the end when you get that mockumentary true crime episode. And you're like, wait. So now they're like almost explicitly saying it is Beyonce and it's not just kind of based on things. So that was our biggest question as we went through it, was how much of this is real? How much of this is stuff they just completely made up? Did one person actually go and do this? And so I looked into it a little bit more. And we had this, I found this quote from Janine Neighbors, one of the co-creators with Donald Glover. And she said, every episode deals with real news stories, real events, or internet rumors that have happened. And we have put our wonderful women in the center of the stories. Adding that Glover referenced a tweet in the pitch that asked, why does every black woman on TV have to be a therapist or a funny best friend, someone looking for love, or a teacher? We can be crazy. We can be serial killers too. And the rest is swarm. Pretty good pitch there from Don Glover. I mean, that's why he's as good as he is at getting things made at this point. Because as it keeps going, so we're not going to go through everything, but just the background of it.
Before we get to that, but you had mentioned something interesting at the end of episode one, where you said, or you thought it might have been an anthology series, which also kind of makes sense for like the context of the show. Like there are many of these crazed fans out there, and that actually makes a lot of sense if that was the kind of premise of the show.
And it kind of was in how they cultivated the stories that they were trying to go off of.
Yeah.
Because what the based on true story stuff is, no, there wasn't one girl. There wasn't a Dre Green who went around and did all of this, but these are stories, internet rumors, things that exist around the beehive of just people who have gone too far with their fandom. And then they gave it a through line of one character who over basically the course of 2 years just goes completely haywire.
Murders and so many people in so many states.
And most of the time because they were insulting of Nadja.
It stemmed from the news breaking of the best friend committing suicide during like the album release time. So everyone on Twitter was responding to it like, she killed herself over festival, like this dumb bee, blah, blah, blah.
Apparently was a rumor that existed that this Marissa Jackson person was somebody who killed herself after Lemonade came out. It's been pretty much debunked as just a viral Twitter moment that wasn't true, but that's what they ran with that, and then connected it to this this other super fan, and then
but she that's goes. That's the through line of it, kind of for the main character. It kind of spirals from trying to defend the best friend who's like no longer there and can like support and defend her, but also as like a way to make amends with the fact that she wasn't there when she was calling that night.
And then the best friend too, the Marissa, the one who kills herself, she is not there to ground Dre anymore. And so it spirals more out of control to the point where Dre is also, I don't know if she is at least sending the text to herself or how that's working, but she's at the very least seeing or making up texts still from Marissa, who's dead, is not sending her texts and kind of egging her on or telling her what to do. Sometimes in less destructive ways, like when she's going to kill what is essentially like a right-wing extremist YouTuber lady that like is against the pop star, she gets distracted because she sees a guy with a staff like a
bomber jacket
Who essentially is Jay-Z, his concert. So she goes, oh, if I can get in with this guy, maybe I can get into the concert area and maybe I can meet Nadja.
Nadja,
yeah. I struggle with it because I want to say Nadja, but that's what we do in the shadows.
Great show.
Yes, but not what we're talking about.
Different people.
But yeah, she is still ultra focused on Nadja. It's just that in the meantime, she's killing people who she thinks have wronged her.
Specifically targeting people.
Yeah, and really just for like tweets she found online. And yeah, some of them are mean tweets, but probably not enough to break into somebody's house and bludgeon them to death.
Well, almost every time she starts, you know, doing the Spanish Inquisition, like, why'd you say this on Twitter? They're like, I never said that. They're like, but you did, and I have the receipts for it. And who's your favorite artist?
And then they'll name an artist, and they'll be like, she'll be like, that person only has one Grammy. Nadja has 26 Grammys. Oh, boy, Grammys. Grammys don't count anymore.
I don't want to get you started about Grammys.
We don't have to talk about Grammys. The other thing that is really interesting throughout it is the association she has with food. So Dre, every time she has one of her extreme breaks and does something, she just can't help herself but like get her hands on junk food, which includes Flamin' Hot Cheetos, donuts, potato chips, different levels of food. There's one where she's a stripper at a certain point, and she has like a moment where she thinks she's going to get a hold of one of the guys she's looking for, and then he's not there, and she just grabs the guy's eggs. He ordered breakfast at the strip club.
Yeah.
Just a multitude of incorrect decisions there. But the food thing is really interesting as it goes throughout, how she uses that a little bit as a coping mechanism as well. Obviously, not healthy, one, in the sense of binge eating, and two, it doesn't actually cope. She does it after she does horrible things.
Yeah, I wonder if it's like, if it's a combination on like her committing like violent acts is like indulging in her like more base level desires, and that is also linked to food and overindulgence and like junk food, or like binging content from this person, and like the constant need to like feel fulfilled or whatever, like filling a void of something or that this person has created in your life.
And also, because it's so focused on junk food, the fact that it's like all artificial and not actually good for you, it's just junk food. And that's what this one-sided relationship is with the pop star as well.
Yeah.
That you're on here and you think, oh, we're so special and we're best friends. And then she even, I mean, she tells that one lie when she runs into somebody from her past a few years after she's been on this spree. And she talks about how she met Nadja's mom, and then she brought him to brunch, and then they had this thing, and she's like crying. And it's like, not only is she lying, but like, she's not lying to herself. She believes
she's
this
fully
stuff.
Deluded.
Mm-hmm.
Fully deluded, which is the, honestly, that is the crux of a good lie. Like, if you can believe the lie yourself,
like the Seinfeld line, it's not a lie if you believe it.
Exactly. But also with the food thing, she meets the guy with the bomber jacket who can like whatever. So she sneaks into his house trying to get a pass, and she makes him indulge in this junk food. And he's like a really healthy, like conscious eater, basically. And then he's like violently ill, and she just like wakes up the next morning and is like onto her same bullshit. Like,
yeah. And then uses him to get into the concert. And then another piece of indulging where she finally this is the one time where she actually does meet Nadja. Mm-hmm. She actually is in the building. She's in the like after party of the concert. And we couldn't quite figure out what they were. They might have been plums. They might have been some sort of chocolatey ball dessert type thing.
I think it was a plum, Nella.
They looked juicier as she was eating them. But she keeps eating them. And of course, they're rounded and shiny. And then eventually, they don't actually show it.
They don't.
But it's as the people react, and as you see stuff of people reacting around this, because Nadja got bit, you assume she like bit her cheek, like bit her on the face.
Yeah.
And like didn't even realize what she did, and then just runs out.
Which is another thing that was like an internet rumor or whatever, that like someone bit Beyonce.
Yeah, that sounds like an internet rumor that would exist. And then,
I don't know. It might have been true.
Well, and then they never figure out who did it.
That's why, because you got to sign NDAs. She says it multiple times in multiple songs. Got to sign NDA if you want to hang out with the queen. Got to sign NDA. I'm going to make people start signing NDAs when they hang out with me.
That's why?
Because it's a flex.
But you have to have like a lawyer like actually write that up for you and have it there.
Sure.
Sounds sketchy more than a flex to me.
So it's also interesting that he, like, they both cast pop stars in the show about, like, a pop star. So, like, the girl who committed suicide at the end of the first episode is, like, Beyonce's protege. So at some level, like, Beyonce must have, like, given an okay to, like, make this show in or
some
whatever.
Way. What's her name?
Chloe Bailey.
Chloe Bailey, right.
And then Billie Eilish is in it.
Yep.
And one of the more compelling episodes. And like,
she did actually a really good job.
I know. While I was thinking it, I was like, is she like stealing this shit right now? And then afterwards, I was like, oh, yeah, that wasn't just like a one-off thought. Like, she did a really good job. Like,
and like the directing of that episode is she's doing the snapping and the editing and
it's,
everything
it's
of
very
that.
It's cult-like.
Yes. And that's probably the most too. We talked about this yesterday after watching a bunch of the episodes. We binged it all in one evening. We were that into it. That it also kind of felt Jordan Peele like, and especially that one felt a little bit Get Out-ish, like kind of being hypnotized and all of a sudden like coming back. And then now this like cult like thing. It was like a woman's camp of like woman and empowerment and stuff. They were like a few steps away, close, but a few steps away from like full on cult.
Yeah.
They probably didn't deserve to be murdered like the people at the end of Get Out do. Yeah. And she takes down at least two of them as yeah. she's escaping because she's missing the concert. She's out there. She's trying to go to Bonnaroo. And instead, she ends up in this group and they're trying to help her, but also trying to recruit her. So it's not the most innocent thing. But again, she goes way too far because she snaps out of it when she can hear the concert off in the distance.
Mm-hmm. And there is an aspect of it that like actually does help her, because after that episode, we see kind of like a change in her behavior a little bit. Like she takes on a new identity and stuff like that and trying to like be more present in a way. But even though she's, you know, because now the police are after her, like mm-hmm. they're trying to track her down. But she doesn't have a phone anymore. She takes on like a new identity as Tony. And so in some aspects, like it
remember,
was
kinda... there was one more thing that had to happen for her to get there. She breaks into her childhood home. It turns out we learn this as it keeps going on, but she was a foster child of this Jackson family who was Marissa's biological parents. And she had behavioral issues growing up and everything as well. Apparently attempting to murder somebody for, I don't know, they just jumped on her at the slumber party. And
yeah.
They
jumped on Marissa.
Right.
And then in order to protect her, she like stabs this girl.
Yeah.
Who honestly should have gotten stabbed.
She was kind of a tool.
Yeah.
But yeah, so as the time goes on, you're right. She does reinvent herself and she does feel like she's trying to at least be more of a normal person, for lack of a better term. She ends up with a girlfriend and she meets the parents and she's still not quite there because this girlfriend doesn't like Nadja. And she won't let that exist.
Yeah.
She won't let that go.
But she has for a long time until she finally cracks when she gets two tickets for the anniversary. And this obviously like very career oriented, like goal driven woman is like, are you kidding me? You spent this money on this where I've been like begging you to pay rent. And like, I don't know how to not say in a mean way at this point. I do not like her. Her music sucks.
And that just doesn't sit well with, at this point, Dre is going by the name Tony. And that's the, I talked about how like the intensity kind of keeps wrapping up, and this was like the first time she like killed somebody so personal, except for maybe the boyfriend of Marissa, but that was all the way back at the beginning. And then she goes on a spree of basically killing strangers, and it's always very intense to watch an actor strangle another actor to death. And that scene was, it's a lot to take in.
Yeah. Even after she hits the girlies with the car at the like cult camp or whatever, like it's very eerie the way that she's even moving. Like mm-hmm. it's like an out of body experience. Like it's very, very bizarre.
And the actress playing Dre also does such a great job with, at that point, that girlfriend that she does end up strangling. She says like the bewildered look of helplessness or something along those lines. And it's like, that's a great way to describe it. Like the way she does her face, that like she like almost like a deer in the headlights all the time, especially mm-hmm. when she's going through these moments of you shouldn't say that about Nadja. You shouldn't say that. And then she does it. And then she remembers, I need to go to the concert. And she's freaking out. She's having that face because she realized she doesn't have the tickets because she left them on the body that she's burning to cover up her murder. And she's trying to get tickets. She murders a scalper to get the tickets, mm-hmm. still with that look. But then when she gets in, it's like the first time in the movie you see her smile.
Yeah.
She like doesn't smile like, or the show. She like doesn't smile the entire series until she's actually in the concert. Then,
not like unbridled joy like that.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, because even in the... Even when they first meet Nadja, she's like panicking almost. She's having like a panic attack.
Right. And then you get to that point too where you're questioning, is this a reliable narrator as we're going through this? Because basically the last thing is she runs up on a stage. Security grabs her initially, but then Nadja, purportedly, who knows, says, let her go. And then she hands her the mic. She says how she loves everybody in the crowd. And then she's shown leaving with Nausea, which I just don't believe.
But it's Marissa's face.
Is that okay? That was.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
That was on Nausea.
I couldn't tell if that was. If that actress just kind of looked like Chloe.
Oh, yeah. Bailey. No. Yeah.
Because, like, wasn't supposed to be actual Beyonce. So I didn't know what. Okay. That's another thing that, like, is clear through there is that, like, Nausea and Marissa kind of hold the same place in her heart. And she's dealing with that and, well, never really deals with it.
I've read an interesting theory this morning that someone was saying that Dre actually killed Marissa over in a jealous rage act or whatever. And then she fantasizes going out, meeting the guy, hooking up with the guy, coming back. And then
she's dead. Yeah. And that's, I mean, they never go out and say it and they never show anything that says that, but the parents of Marissa do accuse her of killing her, but you're unclear whether that's an accusation of, like, you pushed her to suicide by just not being there for her or something, or something, a little more sinister, which it could be. Does she have mental lapses and not even realize that she's killed people?
I mean, yeah, she's
so disassociated from her crimes.
Yeah, she has parts of, like, a memory loss or, like, a misremembering, events that are tied into her trauma. So, like, things are tied into food and violence. Like, mm-hmm. She says, like, sorry, like, I spilled milk. But that was really in reference to, like,
blood.
Yeah.
She says the milk is red. And for a split second, I go, strawberry milk. And I'm like, you know what? Probably not.
Honestly, are you a strawberry milk fan?
No, never was.
Gross. It's kind of the only, like, artificial strawberry thing I like is that, like, Neapolitan. Neapolitan.
Sometimes at, like, the fair on, like, a elephant ear or a funnel cake, the strawberry. But that's still.
Oh, see, I don't even like that.
At least when it's a little fresh, but the syrupy kind, not for you.
Yeah, like a fresh strawberry milkshake. Yeah, I could do that with the strawberry chunks. But just, like, strawberry milk? Why?
There used to be a strawberry frosty at Wendy's. That was pretty good.
At least there are, like, chocolate-colored cows. You know? Like, strawberry is just too much of a stretch for me.
Look, here we are talking about horrendous things in the show, and now we're on to food. Are we?
Indulging in our base level desires.
Oh, no. But, yeah, I really enjoyed Swarm. It'll be interesting as it is out. I think you'll see more thought pieces, people trying to connect the dots of, like, oh, here's the examples of some of these things, which will be a little eerie, but also, like, kind of morbidly interesting.
It's also very funny. The show is very funny.
Yeah.
There are multiple parts where I laughed out loud. So it's not all, like, doom and gloom and scary.
But it is weird. It's a good watch for binging, I think, because you get people who said, well, we're just going to make the episode as long as we want. So there's some that are, like, 26 minutes. There's some that are, like, 40 minutes. But none of them are too long. You're not in a bunch of hour-long episodes, which I like when there's, like, a variation in them.
One more thing about Swarm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to drop the only F word of this show, but fuck Joe Goldberg and fuck you. Like, this is such a better version of that concept, like a crazy, obsessed, stalkery person, like, committing murders and, like, truly, like, unhinged mentally. Now, I haven't watched part 2 of season 4 yada, but, like,
You didn't even watch part 2 of part 1 of season 4.
Yeah, whatever. But in the same vein of, like, it's just interesting, like, the dichotomy of, like, a black girl in this situation of Swarm being able to get away with all these murders because she, like, slips through the cracks because, like, people don't care about black women or African-American women in America. But, like, Joe getting away with murder because he's, like, a affluent-looking white dude and people care way too much about white men in America. Like,
so you like this version a little bit better. That's another thing.
It's just more intriguing. It's, like, more psychologically, like, deep, honestly. It's
also another theme that comes up a few times that, like, she, as you mentioned, kind of falls through the cracks, is able to get into certain places or have people have their guard down. based on, and this isn't a reason to not try to be an ally to people who are being oppressed in any way, but like there's two clear instances of like, oh, she probably maybe would have gotten caught sooner had this guy who ran into her at a gym and was like, oh, is this lady not letting you in because you're black? And he was like, she's with me. And it was funny because he did that because he misrecognized her, which is another whole issue with people, especially of different races. They have a hard time telling them apart sometimes. And she just plays along because she's like, it's going to help me. It'll be advantageous to me to pretend to be this girl. And then there's another one where a cop is following her because she's super suspicious. And it's like, yeah, that cop, like, maybe he is profiling, but like, he's actually correctly profiling the situation and just kind of waiting for her to slip up. But a girl with a bunch of Instagram followers like kind of harasses the cop real quick to like get him off her trail. And it's like
also like the insufferable right wing woman who's like the worst also like profiles her, but she's like absolutely correct for profiling her because she's trying to murder her in the elevator.
Right. So she has the kettlebell with her. So these misplaced, I kept using the term allyship, however you want to call it, but like, yeah, like people trying to do the right thing, and it's like, but in actually this one, this girl is bad.
Like, I swear this time. Like,
well, what are you going to do? And then she continues to go on her murder spree.
Yeah, so Swarm is great. And there's strippers for the people who like strippers. There's a stripper episode.
And there you go. For the people who like basketball, there was a lot of that on this week.
So good.
You like that?
So good.
All right. The transitions are getting better. So you have obviously watched the NCAA tournament before. You don't normally do a bracket. I wouldn't say you're an every year person to do a bracket, but you were coerced slightly by me, slightly by your friend.
I got peer pressured, y'all, and it was bad. I'm never doing it again. Miserable time.
You enjoyed watching, though, on the Thursday and Friday, right, with all the games on. You got four games on at once, at least three TVs going.
No, I didn't. It was stressful, and I didn't like it. I don't like it.
You thought
like
it was too stressful?
It is stressful.
You were too hopped up on getting the picks correct that every time you got one wrong, you just felt worse about yourself?
I tell you what. If we had the three TV situation going and I didn't have any stakes in it, it would have been more fun because I'd just be like, ooh, they made a basket. Ooh, the people with the basketballs. But this time they were making baskets and I was like, God damn it.
Because then you could at least like take some solace in the context of, oh, this 16 seed is going to beat this one seed. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
But obviously you didn't have the pick. Nobody had that pick.
Well, and then I was like riding high because by the end of day one or day two, I was like, okay, 23 right picks. I only have like 9 wrong picks. Like I'm doing good in the middle of the pack. I did the fan bracket or whatever. So like I was, you know, in a good spot. I had more right picks than you. And then by the end of Saturday, my whole thing was busted. Busted isn't a good word. Roadkill. Strangulated. Like, I don't know how to describe
it. Eviscerated.
Truly, truly. My bracket got blipped in a millisecond. Gone.
Is that going to make you not want to watch the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, which is coming up this weekend?
I told you, I'm not watching a single more second of basketball. That's not true. I'll probably watch a couple of.
It'll be around me, so they'll be on.
If Xavier loses this round, I'm out. Done. I'm not watching anymore. I could care less. I'm going to read some smut on my Kindle while you watch your stupid little games and be miserable either way.
Well, we could maybe get one of the TVs. You really don't need all three at this point. And it's, maybe you could watch something on one of the other TVs.
I'll just go upstairs and watch Pride and Prejudice for the billionth time.
That would be more fun to you than... But, okay, so from that standpoint, though, the three TV setup, one, I think, even though there are times, multiple times, especially in those first 2 days, where there are four games on at once, I find the three TV setup is more than enough because generally during a four-game part, there's going to be one game that's either in the first half or a blowout or both where you really don't need to be watching that game, and trying to watch four games at once is a little too much. It's the one hard part about those early days. It's so exciting, and you're watching it, but like you do feel like it's a little difficult to actually follow any one game specifically. But I wanted to ask you about the presentation of it, not from, you know, obviously they know how to put basketball on TV, but what do you think of the scheduling and the multiple TV setups and the games just coming at you, and it never seems to stop because they stagger the starts now pretty much perfectly with the four networks. How did it all feel as somebody who was more engaged than you've really ever been in the NCAA tournament?
I think it was good. I mean, the four games, how much is it? Like every 3 hours or something? Like those first 2 days?
Yeah, like every 2.5 hours, the game's like all, like the first game will be over and a new game will be starting. Roughly a college basketball game takes about 2 hours, but there's more commercials, more stoppages if the game's close at the end, especially in the NCAA tournament. So that makes it sometimes last a little bit longer. But you basically get two units of like 6 hours where there's eight games on those days.
Now, I will say, if I was at work in the office, that would have been much more annoying. Being home and being able
more
to like...
annoying. I see. Wouldn't you just like the excuse to not work? That's what everybody likes about it.
Yeah, but again, I'm not so invested that I can like justify taking off like two whole days. So being able to like be at home and like still be in the living room and answering emails and stuff and kind of, you know, watching is cool. But again, by Friday, that wasn't cool anymore. I was angry at work because I didn't want people to freaking email me.
Charles Barkley's here, and then it goes to commercial, and there's Charles Barkley again, and then it's another AT&T commercial. Too many AT&T commercials. I get they're the sponsor, but they're everywhere.
Yeah. I was trying to... One thing about the presentation of it, and it has nothing to do with the actual tournament... I was trying to find Timmy Hall on TV the entire time, and I could not find him. I saw the cup on Twitter. I saw the placement of the cup in relation to the floor. I was looking where he should have been sitting, and he wasn't there. So what picture was he using, and where was he?
Timmy Hall, host of the Buckeye Show. Jen couldn't find him, although he was there. That was another cool thing that we've had before, but... Columbus being able to host a first round and second round for that matter, but having those games in there. So knowing a few people who went to them, by all accounts, it sounded like a good time. I've never been in person to a tournament game. I think you would be into the game you're watching, but I feel like you also might feel like you're missing out on watching everything at home.
But also like I feel like you don't really buy a session. If you're a fan of like the team that you're going to go see, like you have to sit through a whole other game, mm-hmm. or sit, you know, either way, like you're either waiting to get the game that you want to go to, or you have to sit through another game. Unless, I mean, you could just leave, but
what do you do if your team's the first game of the session you're in and they lose in an upset?
Yeah.
Like if they're like a knee underdog and they lose, you kind of going in with that expectation.
Yeah.
But like, oh, big upset. And you're like, well, now do I want to watch this other game? I don't know. That would be a tough choice because your season's over. It's just done. There's nothing else to look forward to.
Will say, I thought it wasn't going to be as much fun without Ohio State being in it and like being in town that night, but it was actually a lot of fun getting to meet new people from like out of town, and they're like, oh, we're going to the sessions tomorrow. Like, what should we do tonight? Blah, 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 blah. Like, I like when people come in out of town. That's why I like going to Char Bar after a Blue Jackets game, because there are a bunch of people from like all over the place, like Wisconsin, a bunch of Canadians all the time. We'll just end up at Char Bar. It's kind of sick.
Unless they're Maple Leafs fans, then I don't want to meet you.
Just drive straight to hell.
Penguins fans. Remember when we were leaving that Penguins game this year, and the guy was like, you know, I really like respect you guys. You guys try like really hard, and like you're getting there. And it's like, we're in the same division as you. It's not like we're the D2 school that came up to play Ohio State in a basketball game.
Yeah.
Like, so you were kind of method acting as a basketball fan this weekend. So just before we start into this.
It's bad. It's bad.
You're the one who's forcing me to do transitions. I could just move on. I could just say, okay, next topic. But instead, you want me to do transitions. So I'm going to try for you.
No.
Now you don't... Do you like method acting? Do you think it's an effective way for people to get into the characters, or do you think it's too much?
Listen, I'm not here to kink shame. If that's your thing, if that's what gets you there, do it. That's how I feel about method acting.
Okay, if you take that stance, then like, okay, yeah, sure, whatever. I don't care if, as long as you're not hurting anybody. That's the problem, one.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is annoying to your other cast members and you're doing things that are way too far. And two, I sort of agree with the quote we're coming from here that I think it's all a bunch of nonsense. If you're a good actor, you can do the act. There is like a certain amount of getting into character. But like the fact that people have to pretend they're the character they're acting as, well, then you're not acting. You're just changing who you are for a period of time.
There's a level of pretentiousness to it. I will concede.
And so there is a duo that, oddly enough, clash a lot as their characters who they won't stop talking about it, especially the older one here, Brian Cox. So Succession, that's definitely on our radar. That starts
season four, baby.
Starts this Sunday. It's the final season. And Brian Cox, who plays Logan Roy, the patriarch of the Roy family, as they're all trying to vie for power in the company, as he is getting close to stepping down, but just won't give it up. Brian Cox, the actor, keeps taking pretty much any opportunity he can to talk about method acting and how he thinks it's a bunch of hooey, because his on-screen son, played by Jeremy Strong, definitely goes into that. And so,
and it was a big topic last season too,
right?
There was like a whole like expose basically about like an article that Brian Cox was in, and then Jeremy like in response to,
they keep going back, but they're not, these aren't like press junkets where they're both there.
No,
these are different entities talking to these people at different times. And so I think because of that, it has this like feedback loop that won't end, because then they both get a little bit of time off and then they get asked about it again. So then that reinvigorates the story. So the most recent one was Brian Cox talking to Variety, and he said, "It's really a cultural clash. I don't put up with all that American shit. I'm sorry. All that sort of, I think, therefore I feel. Just do the job. Don't identify." Then he goes on to talk about Daniel Day-Lewis, who he thinks is the reason that all of this has started. "He retired at the age of 55, and I'm going, that's when the roles become really interesting. You've retired just at the point when actually the roles get better." And he said, "Of course Jeremy was Dan Day-Lewis's assistant, so he's learned all that stuff from Dan." So he apparently doesn't like Daniel Day-Lewis along with this, who is a very famous method actor. And Jeremy Strong, there's definitely been like enough that he's rubbed some people the wrong way by like staying in character all the time. And it's just
being standoffish and.
Yeah. And it's weird when he talks about it. He doesn't go very hard back at Brian Cox, but he does defend his stuff. So this was in a GQ cover story. Jeremy Strong said, "Everyone's entitled to have their feelings. I also think Brian Cox, for example, he's earned the right to say whatever the fuck he wants. There was no need to address that or do damage control. I feel a lot of love for my siblings and my father on the show, and it is like a family in the sense that, and I'm sure they would say this too, you don't always like the people that you love. I do always respect them." And it's weird because in his answer, you can almost feel like you're going too, like with the method acting, you're going too far with like how you treat the relationships of these castmates. And I know some people have a family vibe to it, but it does not appear to be that reciprocated from Brian Cox in this relationship.
Like, it's okay to just like dislike a coworker.
You can just do it.
Yeah. And it is so like he's being like held hostage by the situation because he is like a method actor. So you're right, he does in a sense like associate the like Brian Cox with like his actual fatherly role, but like he is just your coworker and you can tell him he's being a dick.
And like, it was really funny because on the idea of what method acting is, you had this tweet that we found from this guy, Nev Pierce. He says, "Brian Cox taking every opportunity to denigrate method acting, the favorite technique of his on-screen son, Jeremy Strong, a character who desperately wants to impress his emotionally cruel father, is wonderfully very method." And it kind of, it is.
It sums it up perfectly.
But it's weird is Jeremy Strong hitting harder on the method acting because he knows it pisses off Brian Cox, and then their relationship off screen, but while he's method acting, can feel like Logan and Kendall Roy a little bit more.
But like even like the Sarah Snook, who plays Siobhan in the show, she was like very upset that she, when she found out it was like the last season, and she's very attached to all these people, and everyone was like very emotional the last day on set. And Brian Cox was like, I don't give a shit, it's over, cool, bye, it's just a job,
I'll move on to the next thing,
bye. And everyone, so maybe like Brian Cox is just like a taciturn like personality, which is fine, but like we don't, I hate this because like, one, don't be such a goddamn boomer sometimes. Like, it's okay to like invest like emotionally in like your work and like people that you like. Like, that's fine. Like, you don't have to just like do the job and go home. Like,
he's just kind of an angry old man in that sense.
Yeah, he's just like an angry old, like, so okay, fine, but also like, you don't have to comment on it. He's reached like that old age where like, you know, like people in their 80s think that they could just say the most out-of-pocket stuff and like get away with it. Like, why can't we just like hold him accountable for like being a bad coworker again? Like,
because I do slightly agree with him on the method acting stuff, but I also agree with you that you can just say, oh, we're past that. I've talked about it. I am not a big fan of method acting, but if it works for Jeremy, that's great. That's probably the correct way to go about it. I will say one more thing on the idea of method acting. I don't like that it almost requires you to like give more credit to the actor because he did method acting. Like, if that's what you have to do to get into character and do it, again, as long as you're not adversely affecting your castmates on set or other people on set for that matter, other people on the crew, then whatever. But like, it doesn't mean your performance was automatically better.
Yeah.
If the person who didn't do method acting is also acting well, that you don't get more credit. But I feel like sometimes people do. They want to be like, well, he did method acting, so like he's up for this award and he should get it because he put so much more effort into it. And it's like, yeah, but was the performance actually better? If it's not, then who cares?
Well, I feel like there are two classes of it too, right? And both can be seen in one actor, like Jared Leto. Like, you can either do like the Jared Leto, like Dallas Buyers Club, and like go full, like really immerse yourself in like being like very sickly, like withdrawn, like depressed, but like person, kind of like
Leto as the Joker, which is,
well, that's the second class, right? Of just being a tool and like putting like scorpions in like your whatever, like
he sent like used condoms in the mail, or at least that's what he's rumored like, to have done. Like,
fucking weird, just like weird. You don't have to be weird. Just because like you're doing it doesn't mean you have to subject other people to it. Like smoking, like Cole Sprouse, like just because you want to be cool and smoke, like it's like 2023, nobody smokes inside anymore, like especially not in a place that's not your house. Like, go outside and smoke your cigarette. We don't have to have your secondhand smoke. Like, we don't need your secondhand method acting.
Did you see Cole Sprouse have that comment? He must have been on a podcast or some
he was on Call Her Daddy,
and he was like, well, the reason why most people get into the arts are because they're like extremely effed up. And it's like, you were on The Suite Life of Zack and Cody, which I know that like being a Disney Channel star can like really mess you up. But like, I don't think that's why you started in Suite Life of Zack and Cody. And also like, Riverdale's not that deep, man. Like, I don't know. But you're right. There's somebody who's kind of like, hey, you're going a little too far into it.
At the same time, though, in order to make a Tomlet, you got to break a couple Gregs. So like, again,
crack a couple Gregs.
Crack a couple Gregs. So like, Jeremy Strong, you're doing great. L to the OG. Whatever gets you to that spot, because that show is phenomenal.
I still like Brian Cox a lot though, and everything he's in. He's been in a billion things.
What do I like him in?
Brian Cox is in Super Troopers.
Brian Cox is in Troy.
He's in Troy.
I love that movie. He's in great in Troy.
Trick or Treat, which you maybe have seen me watch it one of these Halloweens.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
But yeah, I think he's been around for a very long time, and he's great. Don't get him confused with Rip Torn, though.
No.
They have that similar, like, gravelly voice.
Yeah, I would never.
And Rip Torn is no longer with us.
R.I.P. Rip.
Mm-hmm. He was Patches O'Houlihan.
Yeah. If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
There you go. Two little tidbits that happened this week. One, what are they? The Daniels? Everything Everywhere All at Once. So there's two guys named Daniel. They directed Everything Everywhere All at Once, which was a really good movie. It won Best Picture. It won pretty much everything at the Academy Awards. And they're already directing, is it just an episode of this Star Wars spinoff show, Skeleton Crew?
I read the article more. It looks like they're just doing an episode with like maybe projected to do more, but they've already done one of the episodes.
So if the foot in the door, this track that... Really, Disney seems to really love to do it, but it happened too with like Colin Trevorrow or whatever, like into the Jurassic World movies, but that never really worked out for them. But like, it doesn't always work out. Sometimes it's fine, sometimes it's weird. But these guys, they direct a nice little, I'll say, indie movie. Everything Everywhere All at Once had a little more clout than that coming in. But
interesting, thoughtful.
Personal project art, too, not just like a director for hire or giant big budget thing that we're bringing together this crew for. And then they direct that, it's successful, people like it, and they go, well, we got to get these guys while they're hot. Here's a Star Wars movie, here's a Marvel movie, and they just keep doing it. And like, it's so predictable at this point. And again, it's not always like that it means it's going to be bad, but like, you can just hire directors who are suited for the job. You don't just have to go with the hot name.
It's interesting because in the case of Marvel, I think we've gotten enough of them now that we've like established a trend where they make like the smaller, low budget film. They get hired into Marvel. The movie comes out. People and like the movie because it's a little bit of a different flavor than they're used to or that they were expecting. Then because it's a success, they get greenlit for the next one. Then the next one comes out and it's less popular than the first one because it leans too much into that flavor or whatever that they liked in the first movie. Mm-hmm. So then it gets canned and then they get canned. Happened like three times.
Yeah, it happened with Taika Waititi with the Thor movies. Love and Thunder was much more poorly received. Who directed the Ant-Man sequels?
I don't know if it's Matt. I forget who it is, but
I feel like people still really like Ryan Coogler, but obviously Black Panther 2 wasn't quite as well received. I mean, the first one was just so critically acclaimed, but that's another example of a guy who's doing some smaller things. Now, then he has also done Creed and everything, but like he started out much smaller than that, and then boom, all of a sudden, Marvel movie. Mm-hmm. Here you go. So that trend, again, predictable.
The actual Russo brothers, they did. Then they ended up doing a Civil War. They did Winter Soldier. Then they did Civil War. Like, it's so predictable. It's painful. And it's almost like cringy now.
And it's just like, I mean, it's like funny when you see it. Like, I sent it to you and I saw the headline and I was like, of course.
If you really want to be...
It's like clockwork.
If you want to make a cohesive story, right, if you want to do cohesive phases, I would suggest having just like one director or a pair of directors be in charge of the phases and sort of delegate that out that way, so it's one vision. Mm-hmm. one real story, with a tone.
That's what happened with Rian Johnson. Turns out people really do like his content and he does a good job of creating his own stories. But he shouldn't be given the middle one of a Star Wars trilogy and say, do what you're good at. Which he is good at things, but like that's why that movie didn't connect, because it didn't connect with the first one. And then because it didn't connect with the first one, they changed the third one over, and then none of the three movies connect at all.
And that the second movie is the best one. Last Jedi is the best one out of that trilogy. I will fight anyone about it.
I don't disagree with you. I can understand why, like, from a Star Wars fandom, some people don't like the directions it took, but it is like objectively the best movie of those three, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Another objectively good movie, and you like it a lot more than me, but you had to let me watch it, and it came out finally on one of the streaming services.
I held you at gunpoint, and I made you watch this movie, because how long have we been together for?
Here's what you did.
How long have we been together for?
7 years in May? Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So how many of your dumb little movies have I watched? How many? Just answer the question. You don't know.
Yeah, it's
they're too many to
incalculable.
Count.
Incalculable.
And you have never not once watched Pride and Prejudice or The Count
I've
of Monte
sort
Cristo
of watched
all
Pride
the way
and Prejudice.
All the way through. You haven't.
Yeah.
Until this week.
And I did really enjoy it. You essentially hired a group of pirates to kidnap me, pretended to save me, and then made me watch the movie.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Bang bang, little reference to the movie. It's good. It's
Oh, kitty. What do you have to say?
Our dog making an appearance. She made it so far this time.
Don't bite the microphone. What do you want to say?
You have to say something into the microphone. There we go.
Say something.
I do like The Man in the Iron Mask more. But that's another one you made me watch.
Great films.
Yeah.
Think about me. I love a period piece. I am a whore for a period piece.
I didn't realize, what is it, Elbar or whatever, where they...
Elba,
where they threw Napoleon. I didn't realize that was like an island that had been like built up and like had infrastructure and stuff. I thought they like threw him onto a deserted island. And the reason I think that is because of the there's two reasons. One is the old Red Bull commercial where he escapes by getting Red Bull and flying off the island, but they make it seem like it's a deserted island. And the other one is a little bit probably getting it confused with Captain Jack Sparrow and roping all the turtles together. And thinking that might have been part of the Napoleon story, but not really at all.
No. Student of history, you are not. So basically, The Count of Monte Cristo, for people who are not familiar, it's a novel by Alexandre Dumas, same guy who wrote Hunchback of Notre Dame. So tonally, you pretty much get it. And it's about a guy who gets manipulated into a treasonous act by Napoleon, and then his jealous best friend basically betrays him and gets him sent to this prison where he spends 11 years,
mm-hmm.
basically. Four of them doing like nothing, three kind of learning, and then seven under the tutelage of a prison mate who he meets, who ends up coming through the floor of his cell trying to escape the prison, and ends up like...
And he was a priest, so he was an educated man and was able to teach him things.
Yes, like, so like the guy didn't know how to read. That's how he was like kind of dense and dumb and naive. So he learns a lot from this guy. They end up escaping the jail, and the whole story is about coming to terms with like his like personal relationship with God and feeling betrayed by God and kind of lost in like self-pity. But then once he finds this treasure that the priest had known about and tells him before he passes, he uses the money for revenge, and ultimately like are your goals of revenge like really holy? And like
when you've essentially become like the richest man, at least like in Europe at that time, and it's like you don't need this revenge. You have everything you could ever want, even to the point where your girly that your friend stole from you after you were put into prison actually likes you and doesn't care about this guy who's a loser and spent all his money and is going bankrupt.
Yeah, like is justice revenge, or is justice like being free and like getting what you ultimately wanted?
And so I watched that
before the journey even happens. It's a very, very, very good movie. I love it.
And it's got some good action. It's got some good stuff.
He comes down in a hot air balloon.
It's definitely just old enough that it has like, it doesn't have that like new action-y kind of movie.
There is like a nostalgia action.
Like it was like just before like Pirates of the Caribbean came out. And that kind of changed a little bit of how they like filmed like swashbuckling, I feel like.
Yeah.
And so it has that feel of like it's, I think it's technically like from 2001 or something like that, but it feels like a 90s movie.
Yeah, it's like very smart in the dialogue too. And except the one girl, I didn't realize this until we watched it together. She whispers most of the movie and I'm like, oh, he's going to hate that. He's not going to understand what she's saying because you have such bad hearing.
And then our furnace turns on and then so the sound of the furnace is the same as the sound of the whispers, and they all just jumble up together and I don't hear anything.
Yeah, it's really cool though, especially because like not Edmond Dantès, but the counter guy to his...
Guy Pearce,
yes. He's like so... slimy, but like also great. Like you can't help but love him because he's like so ick.
Fun villain, yeah.
He's great. He's and Luis Guzmán character shows up actor. Too. Great character. Yeah, he's also a great character actor.
So
great film.
It's on Hulu right now if you want to check it out. All right, that's it for Chops TV this week. We are going to try at the end of episodes to update you on some of the things we're watching so that you can hopefully stay up to date. We don't always know what we're going to watch, but right now we know that Daisy Jones and the Six is ending this week, so we're definitely going to finish that up. That'll definitely be on the pod.
I'm going to sing next week. Ooh, I'm going to sing.
That'll definitely be on the pod next week. Succession Season 4 premieres Sunday. I don't know if we'll hit every episode, but I think we'll hit that periodically throughout because that'll be a weekly release.
Let us know if you like the episode recap format more or if you just like
would rather us wait till the end.
Yeah. What else? Are we watching anything really? We have a couple movies that we have to go see. Do you want to go see Dungeons and Dragons?
I actually kind of do.
I knew you were going to say that.
I don't know. It looks kind of fun to me.
My problem is, like, normally it would be my cup of tea, and I have zero interest in it, and I don't know why. So there's that. Yeah, that's all I can think of right now, like, in the movies. All right,
well,
Scream.
Yeah, I did want to see Scream, but we have to see Scream 5 before we can see Scream 6.
And Creed 3. I have to watch Creed 1 and 2.
So we have to watch all three of the Creeds. So those are some things that are on our radar that might be covered anytime soon. Stay up to date with us with our podcast. You can always follow us @ChopsTV on Twitter @ChopsTV. Thanks for listening.
Made possible by people who subscribe to podcasts and viewers like you.